go. How are we running? We're running a little late. 2 minutes late. Tragic.
When you're right on, according to that.
And it's an analog clock. You can't trust those things.
It has to be synced with the atomic clock in Colorado, right?
That's right. If you don't know where Colorado is, you can't trust it.
Morning.
Hey, Warner.
I don't know if Tim's going to be here. He was in another meeting I walked by. No.
Okay.
All right. Well,
so I thought we're going to do this in blue jeans.
Yeah. Well, that was the first announcement. I think probably next time we'll probably try the blue jeans thing.
Okay.
Anticipate any of that, did you? So we had one test meeting. It was kind of a, you know, it's different. It's about the same. I mean, quality-wise, it's about the same. It's not a lot better. It's not a lot worse, but it's certainly different. Okay, you know, so what that means is, like, you know, it's like you're used to how to operate your coffee maker. You know, and when you get the new coffee maker, it's like,
you gotta slow down.
Where is this button? Why is the button over here? You know, kind of thing. Okay. So and then times, you know, a dozen physicists, and it's a free for all, man. It's horrible. It's horrible. So there's going to be those teething pains when we switch. But probably next time we'll do that. Okay. The other announcement is that Jared Fitzpatrick went ahead and gave us extended the contract. I don't know when the contract was due to expire. Did you hear about this, Werner?
Yes, of course. I have to initiate it.
Okay.
I think it was originally had it sometime in April.
The date now is October 31st.
Yeah. This is a kind of a standard procedure, and the problem is, of course, from the university point of view, it is handled like a grant.
Okay.
You know, they need to make sure that everything is paid and charged, and whatever in time when the contract ends.
Right.
Otherwise, what would happen, they would just send all the remaining money back to you.
Right. Okay. So that's been fully executed now.
Yeah.
Signed by both parties. So
cool.
It's a done deal.
Yeah.
And I only heard about it yesterday. I didn't even realize that you had initiated. So thanks for doing that.
Yeah. Well, as I say, this is kind of something that is more FIU specific, but it's also from you because it is a kind of a contract with a delivery date. And so we just have to make that correct, that's all.
Okay. So that's definitely news. This meeting, I don't know if there's anything there. We can take a quick look. Okay. I sent Eric some comments on the TDR.
Okay.
Thank you for that, by the way, Mark.
Okay.
I haven't gotten around to making those appropriate edits, but I'll get there eventually. That was a question that came up in the collaboration meeting. Should I just go ahead, since we've submitted at least one version of the TDR, go ahead and edit the wiki page indicating that the Start Counter group has indeed submitted or, quote, revised a TDR version? Because currently it says we haven't done anything.
Well, maybe let Mike do that, or I would just write to Mike and say, dude, you know, we're not updated on the page. Should we be? And, you know.
Okay.
I think we should. I think we should.
Yeah, I think
okay.
So.
Yeah,
that.
Well, the thing is, I was kind of curious because I was talking to Mike for quite a while. We were having issues uploading images to the repository, and I figured he would have just done that automatically because he knew that I was submitting an up-to-date draft of the TDR. So I just wondered if there's a reason or if we were supposed to go in and edit ourselves. But I'll just send him an email. So that's
the kind of thing where you don't really know. So just tell him, I think we should be updated. I'd be happy to do it or whatever. You know what I mean? Just so that at least he knows that something's going on there.
Okay, good.
That's how I would approach it. The general comment about that, well, okay. Let's not talk about that, I guess. I'm going to let Werner give you an unvarnished set of a comment at some later point. Okay, good. Okay, Lenser visit, that's of course prominent on today's agenda. Construction status is a perennial item. Application scan turns out to be, I guess we're going to, well, I don't know if we talked about that. You guys did a Y position scan and found it's not that sensitive to Y, not as sensitive as we had feared.
Yes, that's true. I don't have those results on hand to discuss today because actually the measurements were underway and we did two sets of measurements where we were increasing the resolution from about 400 micron down to 200 micron. And then there was another set of measurements that was going to occur at 100 micron resolution. And then one of the students that was performing the measurements actually ended up breaking the translation stage that connects to the test stand. And after speaking with Newport, this very well could cause the resolution, the 1 micron sensitivity of the test stand, of the translation stage to be compromised. So we actually have to order another one before we can continue those measurements again. So they were done, but they need to be redone.
Okay. I think this is something we might want to discuss again, Eric.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. But anyway,
that's fine.
Those measurements were very useful, for framing the problem in our minds, I think. Okay. Let's see. So, I know back with Sean. That's not on the agenda per se. Did you want to say anything else about that, Eric?
I'm sorry. I was writing something down. I apologize.
Okay. Last what? 5 minutes. Construction status. Last paragraph in that section talks about the Monte Carlo and the time walk corrections.
Okay. Yeah. So Sean Dobbs got it. Yes. So like I reported in the collaboration meeting, a lot of progress has been made. I essentially have all of the classes constructed in order to calculate the distance of along the path of the scintillator of a charged track, and then from there we can read any paddle and have a fit for the attenuation length and the propagation speed, and then calculate what the attenuation factor is along with what the correction for the propagation speed and the mean TDC channel number is. There's some final studies that need to be done regarding the least squares fit for the attenuation length to really pinpoint what the best fit function is. Werner and I have some ideas about that, and that'll probably just take a few more days of focus to really pin down what fit function we want to use for all 30 paddles. I'm pushing as hard as I can to get some conclusive results and have put together a little talk for the calibration meeting next Thursday. I'll at least have some plots to give people an idea of what I've done, and then sort of have some initial results that indicate, for whatever polynomial we choose to use, what the parameters will be, how we can set up a little database to at least give Sean an idea of the number of parameters that we'll need, how many different things how many parameters will be needed for each individual correction that we have to do, and then from there, then we have to start implementing, trying to figure out how to implement. I basically have to convert everything from Python into C++, and then figure out how to implement this with the GlueX tracking software. So that's sort of the what'll happen in the future. But so things are moving along well in that regard. I think you cut out there for a minute. I saw your mouth move. I didn't hear anything.
Yeah. Classes that you wrote those in Python or in C++?
Yes. Okay. Everything's been written in Python so far. So I have to convert everything to C++ in the end result. But getting my algorithms down, Pat, is a lot faster for me just to do in Python because that's what I'm familiar with.
Okay. And then the other thing is, have you and Sean decided on the tables? I haven't been keeping track.
You mean the tables that we'll need for the database, essentially?
Right.
Like,
or is that being negotiated still?
That's still being negotiated. That's essentially once I have, for instance, the propagation speed corrections and the mean TDC channel corrections, those are done completely, and I know the parameters that we'll need for that. However, like I said, with the attenuation corrections, that still needs some further studies. But the point is, I'll have some good idea of what we need to implement for the meeting next Thursday.
Okay, so yeah, that was not on the agenda, so I'm glad we got that in. Support structure construction status, we will get to that today. The electronic status, I haven't heard anything beyond this, so I think that's kind of in a waiting stage. Tolerances, additional measurements. Okay, those additional measurements were done. They're difficult to do. Werner reported on that. Let's visit. Yeah, so Eric, you know, Werner had a sit-down with Chuck and Tim and I. I don't know if he told you that, but he did.
Okay. We talked about it briefly.
Yeah, we backed him up against the wall.
We locked him in my cube there. He couldn't get out.
Yeah.
It's kind of ugly, but he didn't scream, not once.
But I left right away afterwards.
Okay, so let's go to the Bruce's call. I linked on the wiki to my notes, which gives me an error. Login required. I need to log in. We were all there, except for Chuck. I thought it went pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So it looks like we're in pretty good shape now. They've made 30 of those counters. Remember, there was this big problem with the scintillator that had bubbles in it.
Right.
It was twisted. So it looks like they've made some good ones. And remember, Bruce was going to go down there. And so we had this conference call. When did we have it? March 17th. That was Monday. And, you know, it sounds like Elgin is losing money on this contract. Put it that way.
They had to remake it, right?
What?
Since they had to remake them, right?
They had to remake them, and they were working really hard on this batch, and
right.
They changed a lot of stuff around, put a lot more effort into it than they did on the first batch.
Right.
So, with the first batch, they would have maybe made a profit if that had been any good. But no, I don't know exactly what.
Yeah. Well.
But they dumped a lot of effort into. Indicating
certainly not more than we are paying.
What, Jordan, what?
That we are paying.
Oh, yeah. No, it seems, we don't know what the numbers are, but it just seems like they're losing money on the sucker, you know, kind
of. He made it sound that way anyway, right?
Yeah, they're working hard, you know. They changed things all over the place. I could send you a copy of
of the notes, and then Bruce is going to have a report on it, you know, kind of.
Yeah, whenever Bruce sends out his report, can you? I'd like to do it.
Basically, they went to a room with elevated temperature. They use wood against the scintillator rather than metal. You know, they changed the. They studied the way, you know, how long to bend it and how to cool it down, and looking at the twist as an inspection criterion coming out, and the bubbles in it is now part of the inspection scheme. So,
okay, sound like progress.
Yeah.
It's also used to keep in mind, by the way, of this story for everybody who has liked to make these comments that this is such a trivial detector.
Okay, there we go. It's not that easy. And you guys, if I made any mistakes on these notes, feel free to go in there and change them. You know,
okay.
Anything I said which was factually incorrect.
Okay,
so I don't know. You guys want to discuss? Is there any more to discuss on that?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big
base. I mean, was there times involved?
Yeah, good question.
You mean in terms of when they're going to complete the production?
They're part of it, right? Because are we still getting like 50 of them or something? Or?
Yeah, they indicated that they have 30 done, as Mark has previously said, and they have 20 more to go. They seem to be pumping these things out pretty quick, and in the meeting they indicated that they should be done in about a week. So I'm just sort of estimating in my head that that's 2 weeks, and then, you know, a week for shipping to get out to California. And it was brought up in the meeting that we would ship two batches of 25 just to go ahead and get McNeil on the ball. However, I've been, I contacted McNeil, had a discussion with them, and he seemed a bit hesitant at the beginning, saying that we would have to change the contract and that he would have to speak with his production manager to see if they could actually fit it in the schedule. That was on Wednesday that I spoke with him, so I haven't heard back from him yet. Actually, I'm sorry, that was Tuesday that I spoke with him, so I haven't heard back, so I'll put in another call today to see what they say. So, I mean, like I said, I'd like to ship them out now just to get them started. But we just have to wait and see. So,
Okay. That's
kind of where we stand.
Okay, so I'm glad we went to that. I was a little bit confused about that because, you know, I can imagine that they want all 50 in hand so when they start they can blow through the 50, you know, in one go. Okay, that's fine. But why can't they accept shipment of in two pieces and just kind of take a peek at the first 30, you know, without actually doing much, just to see whether it looks like some, because they're the ones that did the rejection in the first place, right, of the first one. So it might be kind of interesting for them to look at them and say, these pass. And then just put them on a shelf, you know, and then wait for the other 20 to come before they fire up the factory.
That's a good point. No, I will definitely pitch that to Robert and see what he says. Because, again, you know, Elgin did send them that one bar, and the Ibrahim, the same guy who did the rejection, said that this bar was good. So where that bar is, I don't know. But, yeah, I will definitely speak with Robert in regards to this, so...
I mean, the point being that shipping and actually doing the work don't have to be. It's not like a huge box or anything like that.
I agree.
If they had the first 25 on hand and the next box is coming a week later, right? Maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's going to take a week. How long does it take to do 25 of them?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably a couple of weeks.
25 or 2 weeks. I mean,
yeah, so
by contract, 2 weeks. At what they've reported, I mean, that should take them a week. Because I think originally, you know, we had this, they gave us a 4-week lead time, and it got to about week 4, And with this previous batch of 50 before they actually even started on it. And then as soon as they started, they said that they would have it done in a week. And then it was the next day is when the rejection of 50 happened. So I don't know. You know what I mean? I hope. Like maybe those 4 weeks were R&D. Maybe they were just sitting on them and fell behind in production. I don't know. That actually should be something we might want to inquire about.
Where are we on the agenda? Counter construction status. Anything?
Yeah.
Anything new there? Of course, Eric gave his report yesterday at the collaboration meeting, which we're going to make him repeat.
Well, I think actually we've covered the majority of it. We talked about the Monte Carlo simulations. We talked about the inner support is what we're going to talk about later in the meeting. I've got a few slides to discuss along with that. I think Chuck sent out some PDFs as well. We made some minor modifications to the test stand. We did that in the machine shop a little while ago. So aside from getting a new translation stage, the test stand is completely set and ready to roll. And then, you know, I mentioned Bruce's quality assurance evaluation, which we've already discussed, and I talked about my discussion with Robert McNeil and the whole shipping issue. So, and that's what we just talked about as well. So there's nothing to add as far as what I mentioned yesterday.
Okay, that's okay. All right, sounds good. Okay, so should we go on to support structure? So Eric has slides. Chuck has some slides. I put Chuck's slides in the slides directory.
Uh-huh. Mine are there as well.
How do you want to start?
I don't know. I guess actually, I mean, Chuck, I have measurements on one paddle that we can discuss about being over and under.
Yeah.
So I don't. Do you think it makes more sense to talk about yours before mine, or?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it doesn't matter. Whichever way it sounds.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess it really doesn't matter. So in the talks directory, paddle measurements, PDF.
Right, got it.
Where is that directory again?
On the wiki, if you go to the very bottom.
Yeah. I see it.
Directory. So yeah, I just set up these directories so we could dump files in there,
yeah.
You know, and then we can get them in the meeting. It's kind of a simple way to
work.
Okay.
Is it coming up?
Yeah.
We're there.
Okay, good. Okay, so we did a couple measurements that we've been discussing for a while to measure, to kind of get an idea of what our tolerances need to be for the Rohocell support structure. So the geometry in the middle is just to give you a reminder of what the nominal specifications are as we've sent to McNeil. And the dimension that we're particularly interested in is the dimension of the wider side of the trapezoid. So if you were to essentially just look downstream the scintillator, this is the edge that couples to the side PM, and the top dimension is 16.92 millimeters in width, or 0.666 inches. So we aim to continuously measure any variations of the design specifications along the straight section of the machine scintillator. I also aim to measure the quantity, which I've labeled D top for the remainder of these slides, at various locations along the straight section. And if you recall that the aluminum foil that we've wrapped the paddles in is 16.5 microns thick, therefore, the paddle wrapped in aluminum foil should have a dimension of 16.953 micron Actually, I'm sorry, that's a typo. That should be millimeters, and then or just 0.6674 inches. Okay, so if you look at the next slide, we tried various setups of how we could possibly measure any potential deviations on the edge of the scintillator along the full length of the straight section. It was about 395 millimeters. We utilized a micrometer. The key problem with this setup here is that the micrometer has a hemispherical probe tip, which means it's not completely flat. So that actually affects your measurements quite substantially. And then we just used a clamp to hold the scintillator together, and then we would run the micrometer in parallel with sort of this guide rail along the straight section of the scintillator. So that's just sort of the setup. And then the next slide, this is just sort of a close-up, but we found immediately that the results were unreliable, and we found that if the micrometer probe traverses down the edge of the scintillator at all, you see a huge deviation on the order of, 40 thousandths of an inch. And the problem is any small deviation, you would immediately start to see large fluctuations. So if we actually wanted to do this in a reliable way to where we could really trust the measurements, we would have to custom fabricate some tools. And this would essentially take a little bit of time. So instead, actually, Werner came up with another solution for us to sort of do this in a different way. And in the next slide, we made essentially some discrete measurements. So basically what we did is we took one scintillator, wrapped it in aluminum foil using our wrapping templates. We created a paper template which mimics the geometry of the straight section of the scintillator and laid it on top, not so much that it would actually extend across the surface to affect the measurements. And then I just mounted it in the test stand. And then we used a micrometer that has a 10,000th inch resolution. So the micrometer was placed at 8 measurements along the straight section at about 40 millimeters apart, and we measured this D-top parameter at each of the 8 locations, and the measurements were made 3 times, and then an average was taken of the 3. So if you go to the next slide.
Okay.
So if you recall, again, the wraps, the nominal spec for the wrap scintillator, the top, D-top is 16.93 millimeters. On average, we found that the quantity that we measured was about 19.2 millimeters. So this means, on average, we were 38 micron under spec. And actually, in all instances, at all 8 locations, we found that...
Let me interrupt you quickly, Eric.
Okay.
If you say you measured 19 millimeters, where are these 3 millimeters coming from? Or is that a typo?
What do you mean the 3 millimeters?
Well, you're right. Nominal spec 16.9 millimeter. Unwrapped wrap 16.953.
On
average, you said D-top 19.9 millimeter. So there's a 3 millimeter difference.
That is absolutely...
That would be 16.9151.
Yeah.
Is that right, Werner?
That's what I would hope.
Yes, those are typos.
Under spec, so.
Yeah, no, those are typos. I apologize. Yeah, so that should read 16.9151 and 16.92. I apologize for that.
You flipped the unit's digit upside down, and then it's okay.
Okay, so I guess is everyone clear?
It's actually a parity transformation to figure it out.
We're paying attention.
So this tells us that they're all coming in under
spec, and what I found from the 8 locations. That at worst we were 62 micron under spec, and at best we were 13.7 micron under spec. So the point is, this was only done with one paddle, if need be, I can, and I was just going to leave this up to Chuck and Tim or the group in general, I can go and make these measurements for three more paddles. This particular measurement is a little abrasive on the scintillator, so I want to keep one reference bar that hasn't been damaged. I don't want to do this measurement to it, but there's three other paddles that this measurement can be done for. So if you feel that...
I think it's dumb. We should do it in order to get a feeling. I think it's worth sacrificing a little bit to material. But it would give us the variation information, right?
Mm-hmm. So you feel that we should make the three measurements? I think the connection went down.
Yeah.
Okay, done. So, Chuck, what I can do is I will summarize those measurements. I'll get them done as soon as this meeting is over, and I'll have those to you by the end of the day.
Thank you.
Okay.
So on my slides, I was just using some vague numbers, which your numbers will certainly help.
Okay, good.
Okay, so in fact, that one example that you have at the top, the on-average one, that says that with the wrapping, that brings it into, that makes it nearly the unwrapped nominal.
Yeah.
With the wrapping.
Yes.
One way to think about it.
Which is quite convenient, actually, for Chuck. Right?
Yeah, well, yes, but then again, we don't have the shim we may still have the shim at silicon PMs, right?
Yeah.
Because
I have
to move it out a little bit, which is what we want, right? You want to put a shim back there so we can maximize.
Just a little bit.
And this will still allow you to do that, so.
Okay. So let's see, is that the last slide then, Eric? Yes, it is.
That's the last slide.
Okay.
No, I think it may be interesting to see how that varies from paddle to paddle. We have no guarantee that the real batch will be exactly the same. But maybe we learn something just from going from paddle to paddle, what they are reproducing.
Yeah, right. It also might be that, you know, that if a paddle is thin in one spot, it's thin everywhere. But if it's fat in one spot, it's also fat everywhere. There's that sort of,
you know, what we learned with the time of
flight. Maybe, maybe not, you know.
The time of flight, everything was over, right? So you like to think some are under, some are over, but.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah, my original thought was considering how McNeil has described how they construct the scintillators. If one was under, then it's a good chance that most of them will be under. But like I said, I won't know that until later this afternoon.
Right.
And I would have had them. I just ran out of time yesterday.
Oh, sure. I like Eric's numbers much better than what I was doing. How about the one with just the wrapping only, moving the panels out? The very first one there.
Hold on. Wait, before we move on to your stuff, Chuck, I guess from an engineering standpoint, do you feel the way that the measurements were made is as optimal as they could be? Do you think we should do something different? Do you think we should have
a higher
resolution? Like do 16 points or do more points?
You know, these things are thin scintillators, right? So you're going to give a little bit when you're holding it down, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
No, I think that's okay. That gives us a pretty good idea of what we have.
I mean, the thing we cannot really measure is really the nose section because it's extremely difficult to measure that shape accurately there. But I think if we find, I have a relatively, I mean, that's an extrapolation, a good feeling that if the straight section is good, then probably the nose section is good as well. Because it's kind of machined in one path, right?
Right. All right, anyway, so my two PDFs might not mean anything anymore, but the first one I did, I sent out last week, and all I did was add wrapping, right? And we had discussed, or Tim asked, told me to use about 150 micron of wrapping around the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I moved them out accordingly to maintain that, you know, 300 micron gap in between. But that one, that was just wrapping, so that doesn't really mean a whole lot. If we go to the other slide, that one was just kind of like a preliminary start thing. If we go to the other slide, what I did there was I used the wrapping plus I used the tolerancing, the plus or minus. We had talked previously about plus or minus 200 microns for those things. But like I said, I like Eric's numbers a lot. Much more accurate than what I was doing. But the one on the left, the largest tolerance paddle, all I did was make that's the biggest that it would come in, right? I put the wrapping around it, I put the two together, and it moves it out to what I'm showing there.
Mm-hmm.
The one to the right of it is just nominal. That's what we've been going by, just with that matches the other slide. If everything came in perfect, that's what that would be.
Wait, this one here, wait.
That, wait, what?
The center one is the nominal one, right?
The center one is the nominal. They're 3.093.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that one.
Right.
That's nominal. And the one to the right is if all the paddles came in to the smallest, you know, minus the the 200 microns. And that, of course, moves it in a little bit, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I used 150 microns of wrapping, which isn't right, of course, right? And then... it's just a layout. So if it came in max, we'd have to move it out, you know, like 0.15 of an inch, which is a lot. But like I said, Eric's numbers are coming in under, and that's fantastic. That makes life a lot easier for us, right?
Yeah.
So these are inches.
Yeah.
Are those inches?
These something like 3.3 millimeters actually, almost.
Yeah, so we're almost up to, you know, between 3 and 4 millimeters, which is a lot from one extreme to the other, right? So we have to have a happy medium. Happy medium in there, of course, is whatever we choose. And if it comes in small, we may have a little gap between them, which I think we discussed wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But if they all came in large, that would move everything pretty far out.
Yeah. Plus, of course, we have a really, really fast wrapping.
So 200 microns is the tolerance on the sides, right?
I have between one paddle and the other, it's 150 microns on each one.
Right, 150 microns on each side due to the wrapping.
Yeah, in this layout.
And then the paddles themselves get bigger,
larger,
and smaller,
or smaller. Mm-hmm.
By plus 200, 0, and minus 200.
Yeah. Right. So, of course, the bigger they are, the more they're going to move out, which is the version on the left. So
and
that,
the
150 out,
mic...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, the 150 micron spacing that you implemented, that was for shimming, right?
That was for wrapping and shimming and whatever we needed to do in between.
Okay,
the
so, okay, I understand. I understand.
Yeah, it's a number. I don't know
number. So the aluminum thickness itself is 16 microns, so much less than that. So we're assuming that the wrapping thickness will come from just, you know, irregularity or whatever.
Right.
The thickness of the aluminum itself isn't really the driver.
Right. And then, you know, those numbers are probably pretty high, right? Pretty loose. But it was just some kind of guideline to start with.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that you have small, because we have such a small angle in these wedges, and a small change in the width of the scintillator can make a much larger change in the radius.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
But then on the other hand, if we have an average value, maybe assume that that all the scintillators will kind of fluctuate, hopefully about some average value, then that will actually probably determine the average thickness. Then you just have a little bit fluctuation. Which might then would mean, depending how you do it, some would need a little bit more, other would a little bit less shimming around the nominal. Okay.
Well, I should say that I went through with a calculator and checked these numbers, and I was off by a factor. I mean, I disagree with Chuck by a factor two, so I went back and I found my factor two mistake that I had.
He called me up and he's like, "What? No way! You're wrong."
I did not.
I said, "I don't know. Let's check the numbers again."
I said, "Chuck, I'm going to have to check my numbers."
Yeah.
I went back sheepishly. I had to call him back, tail between my legs.
Anyway, this gives you some idea of what Werner said. You know, a little bit of can cause a lot on the radio.
So what's our how do we make a decision on this then? Let's pick a number.
I think that since Eric's telling us, and he'll confirm this, that it's all coming in undersize, that the nominal would probably be the best. And then they come in undersize, move them out to where the phone is, and there would be a slight gap in between each one. But, you know, I don't know.
Yes. I mean, the only thing... Let me quickly think. Yeah. If, that is probably the thing to do. You see, because if they are oversized, we can always enlarge. We can always shim outside. The only critical part there is if we have to move this IPM out a little bit, right? That was the other question.
Right.
I mean, I say we pick a thickness of, I mean, we assume nominal, we pick a thickness of wrapping of, say, 150 microns, and that's it.
Between the two.
Between
right.
the two.
Right.
I mean, no, 150 microns. 300 between the two.
300 between the two. Okay, that's what I did. About three.
No, that I would. To define the central radius, that I don't think, I'm not sure that is a really good idea. Is that? Because now we are measuring, if we measure a central, let's say if these things come under specs, of the, yeah. I mean, that is just, we have one measure. So let's say, indeed, they all are a little bit too small. The wrapping, according to Eric, is really kind of what it should be, right? It's basically 38, or what is the wrapping thickness? It's roughly 50, 40 microns. So that means it's 20 microns per site. So it's 40 microns between the detectors. So if you increase that to 300, that's quite a big change.
Yeah.
Because if you now say, okay, we make it, we say the distance, we design a distance, then what we do is basically we design a distance of 300 microns, which, well, that if everything comes in as we should think, that would give us then a gap basically of 300 microns. Now 300 microns, let's quickly think what the effect is on the cylindrical section, 300 microns, well we need to look how that translates of course in the forward section. The cylindrical section is 0.3 millimeters out of 15, so 10% is 1.5 millimeters and then this is a fifth, it's 2.5% efficiency loss, right? Just because of the gaps. And something else in the forward direction.
Well, the aggressive approach would be to say that we could just make everything nominal. I mean, put in 16 microns of wrapping and put in the nominal.
You know, but the wrapping isn't perfect, right?
Right.
Nothing's ever perfect, so kind of given.
Well, I think sometimes it's kind of taken into account in the real measurement.
Yeah, it is.
But remember that wrapping here is just wrapping with aluminum foil, and that is what we are doing. The light tightness, there will be an inner layer of Tedlar of something like whatever thickness that is I have to measure.
Well, do we wait for another measurement, or do we just,
We could do, I have to look, what is the thickness of our Tedlar foil?
In the lab?
Yeah.
In our lab, that's on that big sheet?
Yeah.
I figured we would get new Tedlar and not use that old stuff. But I don't know. I've looked at it before, and I think Tedlar is generally on the average of 20 microns, I thought.
Is it that thin?
Well, I know you can get it. I've looked before. I'm trying to look right now to see if I can quickly locate.
Because if you get two thin ones, then you have pinhole issues and things, which might not be such a big deal. Even if you could assume if we use 50 micron Tedlar, right? You have 100 micron inner radius for the light tightening. So what I probably would do is I have a tendency. If I would say, how about this? If we decide, if the measurements of the other scintillators show up that they look like the other one, so they are all systematically a little bit under, then I would suggest we just go with the nominal radius.
Behind that? But did we determine how much of a gap in between I need? Because that brings it in and out, right?
Between what?
So back to the wrapping thickness, right? So that determines how far out.
That's what's measured with the scintillator, right? That's 50 microns. That's the wrapping thickness. Or if you want, you can go to 80 microns. But I think 300 microns seems to be too much.
Okay. So we can agree on 80 microns in between, maybe? Just give a little extra?
Yeah.
It's not that much.
No.
Yes? 80 microns?
Okay, so that's
40 per side.
40 aside. 40 per side.
Okay, we're going to do that.
Okay, and we're going to wait for the... We're going to wait for the measurements and then have this discussion all over again, though, right? As long as we're waiting for the measurements, when they come in, we're going to have the discussion all over again. You know what I'm saying?
But at least we're coming to some conclusion.
Not if the results are the same.
Okay, so if the results are the same, are we happy with a 40 micron per side gap, 80 microns in between, two counters?
So I just... 80 actually sounds interesting sounds good. The thickness of Tedlar comes between 1 and 2 mil, so that's 25 and 50 microns, roughly. So the 50 micron plus the 30 of the wrapping, assuming a nominal spec is achieved, then, 80 seems about right?
Yeah. Now, if you don't like 80, you can make a hump, so you have a round number.
That's right. We can do anything we choose.
Yeah, I would do something like this.
Okay. Okay. That would definitely change the numbers.
Let's name a number though. Let's name a number. Let's assume that the measurements are somewhat consistent, and we go for what?
Then we got, if the measurements are consistent, they are the same, basically they show what we've seen, and then let's go make the design such that the inner support structure right? The surface that kind of should touch the inside of the scintillator is such that the scintillators in their nominal size have a 100 micron gap.
Okay.
That's
okay, we'll go with 100.
All
right. Yeah. 100 micron gap, which is filled with the wrapping, right? Okay, but we're talking about nominal size scintillator floating in space,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a 100 micron gap between them, and that's
going
to account for whatever wrapping and
yeah.
and everything.
That's what I got out of it. I mean,
yeah.
that sounds
okay.
right.
Exactly. And the same.
All right, so that's...
Now, the inside there, of course, there is, the, as I say, there is, I would put subtract. Let's say if you want, if, I don't know how accurately you can machine that really, but I would subtract there 50 microns to take into account the 50 micron layer of Tevlar that we need for light tightening inside.
What I need, the Rose cell, they can machine it probably plus or minus, you know, 7 to 10 thousandths or something like that.
Okay, so that means then this...
Oh, really?
Does that mean 7 1,000ths or a 7,000ths?
Like 7,000ths, 0.007.
Okay. Well, because 4,000 is 100 microns.
Right. So that's
so where... That means we are anyway discussing then precisions. Tolerances which are outside, way smaller. We are talking now dimensions which are smaller than what they can machine anyway, so which means we have to live with what they can machine.
Yeah. All right, I'll lay it out again and we'll see what we come up
okay,
with.
Okay, I like that. 100 micron gap.
100 micron gap, Norman, that gives you, you know, it's not crazy.
Okay. Perfect. Thank
okay,
you.
That's what we shoot for, right? I think
okay.
we can justify that.
I'll lay it out. Perfect.
That sounds fine.
We design it, and then we see what reality gives us.
Okay, and if it turns out that we're too conservative, or we're too tight, and they come out big, and we didn't leave enough, then we're going to have to shim them out.
Yeah, we can have two situations that happen. Either when they machine the central, the Roja cell structure, it turns out that it's a tad too big, for instance. If that happens, well, and I guess we just have to live with it. That will define what our thing is. But I don't think that will be a problem. If the Roja cell structure is too small by a little bit, we can always shim that if that's necessary, right? Because there in the Roja cell support, we're talking 100 microns, which has no effect whatsoever on where the detector sits from a point of view relative to the side PM. I mean, with the 100 microns higher or lower, I don't think that matters.
Okay.
Okay, that's good. That's the way forward.
Yes, I think I got it. Okay.
All right, so let's quickly leave this topic.
Quickly? What do you mean?
I don't know. The thing is, yeah, okay. All right, cool. That's the end of that's the geometry decision. That's the sub-bullet. Which brings us to the end of the agenda.
Okay. I have some way to...
Is anybody recording this conversation?
I'm a little bit afraid we're talking about angels on the head of a pin, you know. I mean, when his check says 7 to 10 mil, I mean, that blows all of this stuff kind of out of the water.
I mean, that's just, I'll double check with the machine shop there, but, you know, it's foam, right?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It's not
well,
unreasonable.
7 to 10 mils is kind of okay from a point of view vertical alignment. The big effect you would really get if we have large variation in the width of the scintillator, right?
Right, right, because that can
eventually end up with the large radial variation.
That's the
we get a big multiplication factor.
Exactly, because of the small angle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, Chuck, did you happen to ever ask the machine shop what the thinness, or what is the minimal thinness that the Rosel could be machined to for shimming?
I did, and I sent an email out. Maybe I didn't copy on it. I think I said that they can... Let me see if I wrote it down. We're talking about a millimeter on the millimeter scale.
Yeah.
I have to go back and look. I'll send that email again to you.
The other question I have, let's assume a worst case scenario. We build everything, everything looks fine, but we find out that the side beams are radially at the wrong location. Can you take that thing apart again, make a new adapted aluminum hub and glue it back together?
I don't know how clean that would come off.
Or could we, from the design now, that I don't remember, this is a pretty much a cylinder, just a round piece, right? You would have to break the joint so that you could drill kind of new holes to offset the boards to move them radially out.
Right. I'll try and design in there, you know, as much movement as I can out.
I'm just thinking, if we could make that in two units where one can be rotated somehow relative to the other one, then you could say, oh, it's not a problem, we drill a new set of holes that are a little bit further out, but you would have to rotate it by a certain amount, right, to realign it with all the scintillators.
But the idea was to make, you know, two of these foam cores. Maybe we can, you know, make one a little smaller than
the other.
That's
the other thing, because let's start with one and then don't drill the hole in both of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just make the foam cores and then make two hops. So in case, let's say we find, for whatever reason, the first one, you know, nature conspires against us, then all we would have to do is adapt the second top and put the other core together.
Right.
We could do that. Then all you would have to do is basically have it machined, you know, drill the holes where they now really belong, such that the side beams are at the right location, and glue the two things together. Or whenever you drill the holes, I don't know.
Okay.
That way we would have a fallback position, right? Where we could say, oh shoot, that doesn't work. But now we have everything. We know exactly what the scintillators are at that point.
Well, we're going to have a hard time measuring those scintillators, aren't we, when they come in?
Right.
Well, that the micrometer that you're using, you don't want to do that on the raw scintillator. Well, you could wrap those two, I suppose.
Yeah. You just have to be careful, but you can measure them. You don't necessarily have to measure them all over the place, right?
What I had in my head was that, you know, we would receive the 50, I would run tests on them, and then we pick the top 30 that we like for assembly. And then for the other ones, so once we categorize them in terms from best to worst, we could just do a random sample on the worst scintillators. Because, again, this measurement's a little abrasive on the sides of the scintillators, even when they're wrapped. I mean, so...
something, of course, we have now done on the fly. What do you think? Let's assume, for instance, we use a piece of... a thin piece of well-measured... What's it called? Well, we could use Kapton, put the capstone piece in between to protect the scintillator, and then you just subtract the capstone, right? I mean, but we are really now discussing a scenario where we have a problem. But I think the scintillators can be measured without damaging them.
Okay, yeah, that'll just take a bit of thought. Some trial and error with the prototypes, so we can do that, yeah. It would actually be interesting.
We'll think about
that. Because
spare ring machine holes later on one of them. Yeah.
Because I wonder actually if we could get measurements from McNeil, you know, because they use these fancy machines to check the geometry before they actually send them out for quality assurance purposes anyway, and I wonder if we could potentially get those measurements.
Well, it's probably a good idea. We can offer them.
Yeah, that'd be
anyway,
really
right? So.
Yeah. All right, yeah, run that by Robert.
You know, of course, what will happen is everybody will ask, well, are you sure that's correct?
Okay. I think that's it for today, guys.
We got through some stuff. Good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We're adjourned. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. That's funny. Okay, see you guys.